You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You are now entering the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, a show that uncovers what's fact, what's fake, and what's fun in the crazy world of pseudo-archaeology. Hello and welcome to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast, episode 170. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, and tonight I, Andrew Kinkella, am going to debunk Graham Hancock's easily debunked video entitled Debunking the Debunking Industry. All right, y'all. Well, welcome back. And yeah, it's a bit of a Graham Hancock situation tonight, my friends. I thought I'd just sort of jump right into it. And, you know, what I've found is looking at my videos, most of them are not about Graham Hancock. You know what I mean? They're usually about a pseudo-archaeological theme itself, right? Whether it be like some sort of like Giants podcast. Although, you know what? I don't think I've done Giants yet. Oh, I got Giants to do, my friend. But you know what I mean? Whether it be Atlantis, whether it be some sort of haunted ship. Remember that one? And so on and so forth. I kind of go thematically based on singular pseudo-archaeology stories. But I had to kind of change it up for today because Graham Hancock just released this video a handful of days ago on YouTube called Debunking the Debunking Industry. And basically his theme is that archaeologists like me, well, we're frauds and we're in it just for the money, while he's just a hero who's just been brutalized by people like me. And you need to feel for him, my friends. Can't believe you don't feel for him right now. So, yeah, what a crock, dude. It's basically this video. I think it's about 75 minutes long. And it's just a live recording of him basically giving a PowerPoint, but on stage, right? It looks like a TEDx presentation, you know, that kind of thing. So as I was watching this, I'm like, you know, I could go down point by point and kind of debunk his thing. You know, because he talked about the classics, you know, Clovis, oh, good Christ, and those, the ones that we've done in other podcasts, right? But I'm like, you know what? I kind of want to take a step back because his entire argument style, the way he presents himself, it really reminded me of something, and I couldn't figure it out at first. I was like, what is this? What is this? This reminds me of something. What? And then it came to me. It's narcissism. And now I want to clarify, I'm not saying Graham Hancock is a narcissist or not a narcissist or half a narcissist. That's not what it's about. What this is about is the anatomy of the argument, how the argument's done. And once I thought this, everything kind of fell into place. It all made sense because, you know, when you listen to Graham Hancock arguing, don't you always feel a little weird? Even if you're agreeing with them, you're like, ah, there's something I can't. It's like you have a bad aftertaste. You know, I can't quite like put my finger on it, but there's something just wrong about this. And it's because it's the narcissist argument. And so before I go into this video, a moment on narcissism. I do think that the term narcissism is way overused in our modern era. Just everyone's a narcissist and everything's narcissistic and oh, how dare they, and so on and so forth. It is true that our modern society rewards narcissism. That's one of the worst aspects of our modern society. And some of the terms, you know, with it, now we hear the term gaslighting all the time. Again, it's really overused. Even the idea that everyone in Hollywood is a narcissist, that's overdone. Just because you like to be in front of the camera or because you want to be on stage or something, or even just because you want to be listened to, that does not make you a narcissist. And actually, it's good to have a handful of narcissistic traits. I am not here to say it's good to be a narcissist, but if you had none, you know, you've just had no aspect of narcissism in you at all, you would just be like a weird doormat Patsy who does everything everyone says and never had your own hopes or dreams or thought, wants, you know, none of that. So what do I mean by using this term? Well, when you look at the way a narcissist argues, underneath it all, under even beyond the spotlight, beyond all of that, they're constructing a false world. That's the deal. And not only are they constructing a false world, they need you to believe them. That's what it is underneath all of it. It is a false world construction. And in that world, they are never wrong, right? They are right. No matter how outlandish, odd, weird, against reality, narcissists ask you to deny reality. That's another huge part of the narcissistic argument. All for maintaining a false worldview. And they have to see it in your eyes, right? They need to know that you believe their false worldview. And if you don't, they whine. They argue and cajole and bitch and whine. Now, as we get into this, I mean, if you played a drinking game, how often did Graham Hancock whine during this? You'd be drunk real fast. So that's what we're going to see as we go through this. We're going to see this need for the audience, for everyone listening to him, to believe in this false narrative, which ultimately, you know, will give him control. Narcissists can't stand criticism. They freak. You will see him 100 times say he's been, quote unquote, attacked. The term attack is incorrect. He has been critiqued. Nobody had a baseball bat. Nobody beat him with boxing gloves. His ideas were critiqued, but he uses the term attacked, right? That is because he can't stand criticism. He can't just be like, oh, yeah, well, there's this, well, there's that. Can't meet halfway because the false worldview needs total buy-in. Not half a buy-in, all of it. Another thing you often see in this argument is there's a hero-victim complex, right? He is, and you see this constantly, Graham Hancock is at once the hero and the victim. Every time I've ever seen him do some sort of presentation, any some sort of video, whatever, it always starts with how he's been victimized by awful archaeologists, right? And he calls us every horrible name. Oh, another part of sort of the narcissistic argument, there's no empathy. So he will call us every horrible name there is. But if we say the slightest thing negative about him, oh my God, you're attacking me. Right. So he is the victim, but also in the same moment, the hero. He's just there fighting the good fight and he's doing it for all of us. No, he's not. He's doing it for himself, for his silly, obviously false worldview. Right. That's what you get out of this. So sorry to start on a low note, but here we go. So watching this 75 minutes, he starts with this line of like, oh, we need to get to the science behind this. He's always falsely using the term science. And he uses a lot of sort of half semi-academic terms kind of falsely. It's like, no, you're not going to the science at all. You're going to a cherry-picked false narrative. It's not science. There's certain aspects of this. Again, the term gaslighting is way overused. It's so overused that if you're just lied to, it doesn't mean you are gaslit. A lie is just a lie. Gaslighting is specifically somebody's trying to make you believe something that you saw or that you experienced didn't happen, right? It's a whole sort of worldview change for that positive worldview. So he starts in with his various pseudo archaeology stories. The first one is that there's DNA in South America that matches some DNA in Australia. That aspect is true. Okay. Yeah, there is some. But his explanation why? Because Australians sailed across the Pacific 10,000 years ago. Well, I guess anything's possible, but that's a terrible guess based on the evidence. There's a lot of other ways to explain those genetic sharing simply by using the Bering Land Bridge, talking about how populations moved and changed over time, talking about how populations gain or lose certain cells, certain genes, certain gene choices, this kind of thing. Gets a little sciencey, but it's my point is there's a lot better explanations for that than that, oh, this is proof that people sailed across in a boat 10,000 years ago. There's a bunch of other reasons why the whole boat hypothesis doesn't seem to hold any water. Huh? That's right. It's still me here. Most of the Polynesian islands, their evidence of like the first time ancient Polynesians got there was largely within the last like 2000 years or so. It's pretty recent. So what you're trying to say that, well, they didn't hit any of the islands. They just went straight. This was straight. They did the most harrowing, terrible, awful, difficult journey. They did that one first. Just had to knock that one out. Right. All the way across from Australia to South America. No, it just doesn't. It's just not the best possibility. Does that one just to show, I guess, that, you know, archaeology is holding someone from something from you, where we have, you know, our hidden knowledge we're keeping from you. More on that later. He then moves on to Clovis. Oh, Lord. He still hammers on about this same old Clovis first bullshit that we have all heard again and again. Long story short, look, yes, archaeologists used to believe Clovis first in the 1970s and maybe into the 80s a little. By 1990, we were joking about it. I was a student. I told that story in one of the other podcasts of hearing my professors in like 1990 joke about it as an old, tired idea that nobody believes anymore. So he went on and on about how archaeologists were harsh to this one guy, which they were a little bit. It's true. But I guess he's using it as evidence that we are all horrible people because, well, he's been harmed, friends, because we don't believe his stupid bullshit. I know it's me. It's not him. It's not him making up stupid bullshit. It's me. It's my fault. I'm so cruel that I don't believe it. And I quote unquote attack him, critique, and go, no, that actually doesn't make sense. Here's some other explanations that are much better. That's another thing in the narcissist world. You have to have your little perfect world so you can't take other possibilities. It just has to be theirs. He says that archaeologists, we all are all part of a dogmatic religion. I'm going to go with no, we're not. Again, he's kind of built this thing where I guess we're all together. We all meet in secret and we have one ideology. That's something that is just so untrue because archaeologists disagree all the time. Don't believe me? Go to an archaeology conference. People yell and scream and bitch all over the place. There are people out there who can't stand me. You know, that's archaeology. So, but you know, friend, that's because I was attacked. Oh my God, they don't believe me. I was attacked. Well, I am a hero. Yeah, no, it just, come on. Can we be adults? So no, archaeology is not a dogmatic religion. There's all kinds of views on all this. He talks about Bluefish Cave. Bluefish Cave is something I want to do on this show, on this podcast in the next couple times, because I know a decent amount about Bluefish Cave. He just says, well, the early dates in Bluefish Cave are accepted now. No, they're not. Now, Bluefish Cave is a real archaeological site. It's in Canada. They have some great dates of stuff for up until about 14,000 years ago, but there's some stuff that's 24,000. As with so many of these, the dates are actually probably fine, but there's no proof that actual human beings were there at that time. So, you know, he just spouts, like he says, oh, there's incontrovertible evidence that Bluefish Cave is 24,000. No, it's controvertible, not incontrovertible. He talks about a couple other guys. Oh, he talks about Jacques Saint-Mars, who originally worked at Bluefish Cave, saying his life was ruined by archaeologists. I have not heard that. Tom Dillehay at Monteverde. This is the Clovis thing he bitches and moans about. Tom Dillehay did get people made stupid arguments against him. That was in the 70s, early 80s. We all admit that it was lame. He touches on White Sands as being 23,000. White Sands is the best of the early dates, but it's still not 100%. He talks about this other site in the United States, Topper, being 50,000 years old. That's just like a bunch of crap. He talks about how he bangs this Clovis drum forever, you guys. Talks about how archaeologists are taught that there's no point digging under Clovis. That's ludicrous. We dig until bedrock. That's the gold standard, always has been, always. I've been on 1,000 projects that dig under the Clovis barrier or whatever. People just dig until they can't anymore, until it's sterile. They talk about the Cerruti Mastodon site, but they don't name it. 130,000-year-old site in San Diego. That's all bullshit. I talked about that on this podcast. And here's a quote by him. The people who worked at Cerruti have had, quote,
a thunder of attacks. Oh, God. Do they need counseling? Oh, come on. Again, can we enter the third grade?
Let's see. Oh, he has some weird idea of humans have been in North America longer than Europe. That's so crazy. I don't even know where he's going with that. And then there's a quote that he said. You know what somebody said about him? They said, quote, Graham Hancock is a charlatan and fraud. How dare they call a charlatan and fraud a charlatan and fraud? That's not nice. Oh, God. So anyway, you guys, there is so much more here. And we are going to explore that on the flip side, baby. I'll talk to you in a minute. Why, hello, friends. And welcome back to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 170. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Kinkella. And you know what? During the break, which is otherwise known as when I like upload a recording and like start again, I realized something really harsh. An attack that Graham Hancock has done to me. You know what it is? At this point in his presentation, he names by name several archaeologists who battle against pseudo-archaeology. First, he names John Hoops, who battles this stuff all the time online. Then he names my friend Flint Dibble, who he hammers so many times and says his name so many times. He names Stephen Milo, who I respect. And he names my friend Milo Rossi. You know who he doesn't name? Yeah, I'll let you guess. Yeah, he doesn't name Dr. Andrew Kinkella. That's who he doesn't name. Leaves me off the list. What's up with that? Doesn't he respect that I have made like 85 podcasts or something like that? And my YouTube channel, I've done all that stuff. And he doesn't call me out by name. Disrespect. Attacked. Hurtful. That's all I can say. Hurts me. Next time, please. I know it hurts you. Just go, and Andrew Kinkella. Come on. Working here. So he continues his tirade, but he starts with all these people who have quote unquote hurt him. He is a victim of these people. And he, I got to say, you guys, of all the guys he names, he talks about Flint Dibble so many times. I'm like, I get it, man. For those of you out there, just to remember, Flint is the one who went on the Joe Rogan show and handed Graham's hat to him. Flint hammered him. So what's so interesting is you can tell by how many times he talks about Flint and how he has to tear down Flint that Flint got to him, dude. Flint gave him a serious punch in the face. You know, you can tell because the narcissistic argument is going to destroy anything that doesn't agree with the narcissistic argument, with that creation of that perfect world, right? And Flint just showed him reality. So what does he have to do? He has to create a different narrative, a lie, right? So what they do is they say, Flint lied. You will now hear like every pseudo-archaeologist say, Flint lied. Well, he just lied. This is their new story. Realize that during the Joe Rogan podcast and for a while after, this was not the narrative. They stuck this on later. This is like a PR stunt, right? It's calculated. They just go, Flint lied, Flint lied, Flint lied. If they say it 4 billion times, the idea is that Flint lied. He didn't. I remember at one point, I think, you know, Flint in a 4.5 hour interview got one data point wrong. I think he said there were like 6,000 or 600,000 underwater sites when there were only 6,000 or something like that. But this idea that he lied, he did not lie. Listen, I invite you to listen to the entire Joe Rogan podcast, not the interviews after. And Joe is part of this. He's part of this like reconstruction of Graham Hancock, because again, Flint hammered him. Graham Hancock was not ready. He wasn't practiced. He was slow, and Flint handed it to him. Even Graham Hancock admitted that at first. But now that's all gone. Replaced is this fake world, this fake story that Flint somehow lied. It's like, well, about what? If he didn't. But if he did, who cares? I think in terms of the content, Graham lied like 1,000 times. Everything he talks about is bullshit. So anyway, you can tell it's a PR stunt, and you can tell they need to do it because the fake narcissist world, which all of Graham's books are about, you destroy that. I don't see the house of cards ever falling down, but you know, one can hope. He goes on. So Graham Holt goes on to, he calls John Hoops a horrible creature. Jeez, Graham. I thought your feelings were hurt that everyone's attacking you. Oh, right. No, they're just criticizing you while you attack. He talks about Gunung Padang with Danny Hillman, Nadawa Jaja, who worked there, the Gunung Padang fake pyramid that's not a real thing. But he goes on and on about how I think Flint tried to get quote, poor Danny, how he and John Hoops tried to get poor Danny, get his article retracted. They didn't have anything to do with that. Again, archaeologists have day jobs. We have to do stuff like during the day. And part of that is not wasting time trying to get some weird article retracted. The number of times I've tried to retract anything in my entire career is zero. What I would do would be to just write another article about something that shows that it's not true. I'm not going to waste time. Flint didn't do anything like that. They go on about how dare archaeology, quote, archaeology is to have the final word on the past. That's their quote. You know, archaeology is to have the final word on the past. Yeah. So, and duh. It's so weird, right? It's like, of course, because we're the specialists. We work on all this stuff. Of course we do. Goes on. There's always a fringe guy in one. There's this like fringe geology guy who spouts some of Graham's bullshit. And then Graham goes, quote, that's the kind of scientists we need. Then he gets a round of applause from the audience. Of course, because the narcissist wants the scientist who agrees with them. It's shocking. Oh, man, you guys. You know, sometimes when I'm watching this stuff, I'm like, this is a serious waste of my time. And it is. He goes onward about archaeologists teaming up to crush things. We don't. I'm not teaming up with anybody to crush some stuff. Talks about this guy, John Major Jenkins. It's a good name, John Major Jenkins, who was, you know, suffered attacks. And so John Major Jenkins died of cancer a couple years back. And Graham says, and again, I laugh not because of the cancer part. I laugh at Graham says that it was the attacks and criticism from archaeologists that destroyed his immune system. Okay. That's it. That's, you know, next time, you know, I think it's a new thing that cancer doctors are going to tell people with cancer. They're going to be like, you know, I recommend some immunotherapy and also make sure not to have any attacks and criticism by archaeologists. Any attacks and criticism by archaeologists, that will push over the edge. So you can't have that. Immunotherapy and no archaeology criticism. Oh, God. Oh, because John Major Jenkins' idea was crazy, you guys. As soon as you hear terms like galactic alignment, do I even have to say what this is about? Galactic alignment. Right. And precession. It's going to be stupid. Like, and John Major Jenkins related this Maya side of his Zappa to some stuff that, oh, why Graham brought this up is because it was the whole 2012 thing. And obviously 2012 was a horrendous bust and it was just dumb and nothing happened. He did this because he made this point of like, look, the Maya weren't saying 2012. It was really plus or minus like 80 years. And then he's like, you know, in the Maya, we're saying that the world will be reborn in that time. We're a new age of transformation and renewal. And he's like, isn't that happening right now? That, what Graham does right there, that's the work of a charlatan, my friends. Come on. You know, you take an obvious false lie, the 2012 thing, it's been proven. It did not happen. And because in your narcissist world, like you can't be wrong. You have to translate into, oh, what it really meant was whatever, fill in the blank. What a crock. Boy, what a waste of time. And then he hammers John Hoops for a while. Sorry, John, you need some more. You have, quote, been misrepresented. You've, quote, are jealous. You, quote, cherry pick. And you, quote, circularly legitimize ideas. And you, quote, have baseless assertions. All right. So you might notice that half that stuff that Graham is saying that John Hoops does is what Graham does. This is also a trait of the narcissistic argument. What you do is deflect. And then you, what's called blame shift, very common to the narcissistic argument. You blame shift. You shift everything to the other person. No, you cherry pick. No, you circularly legitimize an idea, right? That is classic narcissism 101 stuff. Blame shifting and changing the victim offender, flipping that, right? If you ever want to know what a narcissist is doing, see what they are accusing other people of doing. It's like they're telling you what they do. Again, it's so funny. I have to keep saying this. I am not saying that Graham Hancock is or is not a narcissist. It's like the argument, you guys, if that makes sense. It's the ideas. So it has very little to do with the person. It's the anatomy of the idea, this idea of setting up a perfect world where you can't be wrong. And it's funny how it mirrors narcissism so close. So he's saying that he's trying to be canceled. He talks about the whole Netflix, the SAA, the Society for American Archaeology, sent a letter to Netflix wanting to reclassify his ancient apocalypse stuff from documentary to sci-fi. I have to say this. While I don't agree with what Graham Hancock is doing, I think that the Society for American Archaeology sending that letter to Netflix was really dumb. I've talked about this before. I thought it was a really stupid political move. It just made the SAA look old, out of touch, which they kind of are. And just, it wasn't a good look. It was like, dude, just let it be its own stupidity. Don't, as soon as you react like that, you look the fool. So in terms of Graham being like, oh, it's a documentary. Oh, it doesn't matter. But the idea of the SAA sending that letter, it was stupid. They shouldn't have done that. And he's whining. I'm canceled. People are seeking to cancel me, which is hilarious because he is the most powerful voice in any of this. He has he has two Netflix series. He's a millionaire. He's got a bunch of books that were national bestsellers. He has the biggest platform, the most money. He is a darling of the Joe Rogan show. Like, and he's whining that people are trying to cancel him. What? You know? And if they are, who cares? They're small potatoes. Yeah, I mean, dude. Doesn't matter. Oh, and then he whines that archaeologists mock his show and, quote, throw mockery at it. Boo frickin' who? Like, see, this is so unattractive to me. This is what I don't get. I get why they like Graham's crazy ideas, because his crazy ideas are fun. But I don't get what's attractive about watching him whine, because, man, does he bitch and moan. He talks about Flint at this point again and again. He mentions Flint Dibble dozens of times, just showing you how much Flint hurt him. It's like, if it was the other way around, I wouldn't, like, let's say Graham did something that made me look a fool. I wouldn't mention Graham 4 billion times. I just do something else. Weird. His whining. And what's so funny in that hero victim complex is he whines as the victim, but then he throws like really harsh critiques onto the other people. You know, he attacks other people. Again, you know, the stuff he says about John Hoops alone. So another thing in that narcissistic argument, there's an absence of empathy. So it's like, okay, so you've been quote unquote attacked. Again, really, you've just been critiqued. You've been critiqued, but you see it as an attack. So in feeling the pain of that attack, criticism, but who's counting? In their mind, right? It's an attack. So in feeling that pain, wouldn't you want to not give the next person that pain? Wouldn't you want to be the bigger person? I can tell you this, for me personally, I did have an attempted cancellation, right? Several years ago at this point. I would never wish it on anyone. I would never do that to anyone. It was it really like hurt my psyche a little bit. You don't hear me whining and bitching about it though. But I'm just telling you in honesty, it was an experience I don't want again. And I have never been part of a cancellation for anyone else. Never, ever, not ever, not once. I find it disgusting and just what cowards do. So I would think that Graham would have the same reaction of not wanting to do that to others. He goes on to say about archaeologists lie. We don't. Again, think about it. Why would I lie? I don't get anything by lying. There's no present for that. There's no money for that. There's no prestige for that. It's quite the opposite in archaeology world. If I lie, it's like I get really ostracized. It's like real bad. So I'm not going to lie. But he says we lie because it has to create the false narrative that we're lying because our attacks on him are a lie. And we're somehow keeping like this precious knowledge away from the general public or something, right? That he has to have that argument to keep the false narrative alive. But it's a really low point in the false narrative. Archaeologists don't lie. Again, think about it. Think logically. There's no payoff to lie. I get nothing for lying. So, you know, and he talks constantly about how Flint lies, but not him. Again, it's that flip. It's that blame shift reversal, you know? And I know you could just say, well, Andrew, it's the same either way. Then just go to the facts. Just go to the facts. You know, it is a fact that if I lie, it's bad for my job. If I lie, it gets me no money. If I lie, it brings me pain and no fun. But anyway, more when we return and wrap this sucker up. Hello, and welcome back to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 170. And we have been talking about Graham Hancock's is debunking the debunking industry. I guess he's referring to sort of archaeology, I guess, as he talks about this and certain players in archaeology, including myself, although I was not named by name. Again, treating me as small potatoes. I'm here to tell you, Graham, I am medium potatoes, if not medium large potatoes. So, and we've been comparing this argument style to a narcissistic argument style. Again, it's not about the person, but boy, the anatomy of the argument is spot on. So he goes onward. Funnily, he's talking about how, you know, people need to take his work more seriously. And he ends with like, we just need to look at the equator because that's where his ancient super civilization is going to be, right? He's always prattling on, as you guys know, if you've listened to this before, prattling on about an ancient super civilization that was destroyed at the end of the last ice age, about 10,000 years ago, of which there is no evidence. Again, if there were, I'd tell you tomorrow. I'd be like, hey, look, this awesome evidence. But there isn't any. What's funny is I had just finished, as listeners know, reading his book, Fingerprints of the Gods, just recently. And so he whines that we need to, like, look at the equator, but his book is all about Antarctica. So which one is it? Oh, right. It's both and none at the same time because it's all bullshit. So he, on the Joe Rogan show, he admitted that he had no evidence, that there's no evidence so far of an ancient super civilization. And that was that Frost Nixon moment for Flint. Ah, Flint, I have jealousy and pride at the same time that you did that. It's pretty awesome. So that was it, where he was like, we have, you know, I have no evidence so far, right? But then Graham had some weird explanation for that now. He's saying he doesn't study what we study. This is another narcissistic argumentative style, is the word salad, where they say stuff that just doesn't make sense because it's just one big fat charade and one big fat just like vomit of words. And ideas that make no sense because there's no denying. Again, he could deny, but he said, you know, he had no evidence so far of a super civilization. Oof. So, but boy, that hurts the perfect narrative. He says he doesn't study what we study. And he talks about artifacts and stuff. Well, I don't study what archaeologists study. They study artifacts and dig holes. You know, he says he studies astronomy and geology and mythology. You know, stuff that archaeologists study anyways. Yeah, we study all that too. But we study all of it. We take the artifacts in order to prove things about geology or astronomy or mythology. We use the artifacts. We don't just use silly ideas and beliefs that have no grounding in reality. And he goes on. He's like spouting like archaeologists have no right or so. I don't know, man. It's just you got to turn on the wine to full, you know. And then as an extra added bonus, friends, he brings on another person with him. He brings on Dan the Dedunker. I forget Dan's last name because whatever. But Dan is like, I hate to say it, but this is another moment in the sort of narcissist playbook, the narcissist argument. Narcissists have what they call flying monkeys. A flying monkey is somebody who is with the narcissist and plays into their world, has bought into their world 100%. And they talk up the narcissist all the time. They're just ass kissers, right? But sometimes they don't even know it. They don't know that they've been pulled in. The term flying monkey, of course, comes from the Wizard of Oz. So Dan is a classic flying monkey. And again, you know, Dan is kind of this character online who's not the most, you can do better on the quality front, you know, and the fact that Graham is going to bring Dan on with them. You know, are we a reflection of the company we keep? Let's see. So Graham, this is where Graham starts to talk about how there's a conspiracy against him. And he half jokes, but not. He's like jokes at first, but then no, because that's, again, part of this whole thing. The idea that they're all out to get him. That also goes with the narcissistic argument. It's the argument that everyone out there who won't buy into my crazy ideas, they're out to get me. They're not. They just don't believe your crazy bullshit. It's not a conspiracy. And again, this would also assume that I would have to get together with other archaeologists and make like plans or something. We don't. Then they reiterate that Flint lied, Flint lied, Flint lied. Dan says this, of course, to Graham, feeding him supply about all this crap. They say, I forget which one says this, that we as archaeologists manufacture bullshit pseudoscience to sell a fake bill of goods. This is that flip of the script. We don't. That's what they do. At one point, I think it's Dan who says, quote, credentials don't matter a damn, to a round of applause. They do matter. This doesn't mean that people who don't have a PhD or something can't do archaeology or be like a real, like, interesting, important part. I've said all this stuff before. I mean, the Maya iconography was largely translated by lay people who don't have PhDs, people who just thought it was interesting. All kinds of people can contribute to archaeology. I've had dozens of people over the years who've helped me out, worked with me, who were indispensable to the projects, and they had no degree or anything. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you work within the world of facts and reality. That's all that matters, right? That's it. But this idea that credentials don't matter at all. Okay, you go to the doctor with no credentials, and also get a lawyer with no credentials too, if they don't matter a damn. Silly. Then I can't remember who says this to who, but I think it's Graham who calls Dan brilliant. This is another thing. They kiss each other's ass all the time. They call each other brilliant and brave. And in other places, not here, but they say, oh, they're autodidacts. Autodidacts are people who are just really good at learning stuff by themselves. They do this ass-kissing show. I will tell you this. Real archaeologists don't do this. Flint and I have talked a lot about this stuff. Flint Dibble and I have talked about this. Never have I gone, why, Flint, I just want to tell you, you are brilliant and brave. And he would go, oh, yes, Andrew, you are such an autodidact in your brilliance. It's like, that's gross. We've never done that. I don't do that with my colleagues. I don't do that on stage. I don't do that in person. It's just fucking weird. And like, that's gross. It's vomitous. But this ass kissery, I just don't get it. They talk about, for whatever reason, they bring up the Baghdad Battery, and I guess they're pissed that Milo Rossi debunked it. Baghdad Battery is an easy debunk. No, it wasn't a battery. It was to hold, I think it was to hold manuscripts. So anyway, like if it was a battery, great. Can you make it into a battery? You can. It's really weak, but you can just because of the metals and stuff it's made out of. I did a whole show on that. There's a quote. Dan says, he stands as a bulwark against Graham and the dark forces, I guess. Yes, yes, Dan, you are a hero. A hero. And they go on and on about how they've been attacked and the attacking, and they whine, you know, attacking again. Yes, you've been critiqued. No, people don't believe your crazy ideas because they live in normal world. Oh, God. Dan calls himself, he's an electrician with a GED. He says that. It's honest. He says he's a nerd, and he kind of doubles down on what a nerd he is, but that makes him the worst, the most like painful kind of nerd. The nerd who's like socially inept and ignorant. Those are real bad. You know, because nerds, the idea is they're socially inept, but they know stuff. But man, when you're socially inept and ignorant, whew, that's a tough life. So they talk about us. So Graham and Dan together talk about archaeologists, certain ones that they don't like, as a quote, class of parasite. The idea is that we have a lot of followers online, and that we as parasites, how we make money is we critique these brilliant heroes and then we collect money. You guys. Now, in terms of most archaeologists, I do a lot more media, a lot more like podcasts, YouTube, whatever, than most, right? A handful do. Flint does more than me, just in terms of the amount of material that he puts out, like on his YouTube channel and stuff. Milo Rossi obviously does more than me. Stefan Milo does more than me. But I'm up there. Okay, I'm breathing. I'm probably in that top 1% or 2%. And in terms of the money I make per year, if you add up all media appearances, YouTubes, videos, podcasts, invites, special event, whatever, I don't think that even cracks 10% of my total income. And I'm just honest, like that's where I'm at. You know, it's about 90%, and that's on a big year. 90% I make being an archaeology professor. About 10%. It's probably more like 92%, 8%. You know what I mean? To be honest, that final 10% is from any other. This is like selling textbooks. This is all of it together. So no, although I guess I'm a parasite who's not, I'm not doing this right. I got to increase my parasite situation. I guess I'm not brilliant and brave enough. And of course they rename check Flint and Milo Rossi. God, you know. Again, Flint, I think Flint did a video on this, like talking about how they said his name 42 times or something. Seriously, 42 times. Oh my God. So they bash Flint. They said, you know, so Dan basically says he's there as a bulwark to enable Graham Hancock to make Ancient Apocalypse season 3, because without that, you know, Flint's going to destroy him. Again, Graham holds all the cards. Graham has all the money. They're going to make Ancient Apocalypse season 3 no matter what Flint or I or anybody else do or don't do. It was a moneymaker. And this, Graham Hancock is talking to Dan, who online is one of the most foul players out there. I mean, Dan really says awful things about other people. He said awful things about Flint. He's the guy who tries to get people fired. He's the guy who tries to like have like social media dog piles on other people. He is the worst of the worst. And Graham Hancock brings up some quote, some nothing quote of Flint Dibbles. And he goes, quote, "It is quite offensive to the ear." Are you kidding? You're talking to Dan, like one of the most purely offensive people out there. Give me a break. This is, again, that classic victim offender flip, that classic narcissist style. Talk about this at this point, you guys, that you know, I think that archaeology needs to remove its ego. Okay. I got to remove my ego, man. Archaeology is poisoned by arrogant bullies to win. See, this is another thing. And just this shows just their ignorance, too. Even Graham, and I'm surprised Graham is ignorant about this stuff. I think he's willfully ignorant. I know Dan's just ignorant, but Graham has had enough time in this world. When what? There's no, that's not how academia works. It's not how archaeology works. You don't win. You just work. Like, that's just what you do. So where it's, you know, archaeology would be great. We'd be able to find the ancient super civilization in the Sahara. Oh, wait, or is it Antarctica? Yeah, make up your mind. Oh, yeah, make up your mind, because it's all bullshit. So, but we'd find that. But, you know, it's good work has been poisoned by arrogant bullies like me because I just want to win. Okay. And he ends up saying that, you know, we need a fresh new perspective. Yes, a fresh new perspective. Oh, God, you guys. So, again, what I take from this, it's fun and interesting looking at the anatomy of these arguments through the lens of narcissism. I like doing it because it just fits so well. It makes things that seem to make no sense start to make no sense. The idea of, like, why don't they just take a few of these facts in? Why don't they just change their ideas a little? Even though they're all, it's all bullshit, but why not make it more palatable? Why not make it a little more sneaky to make it make more sense? They can't, because they've constructed this false narrative world and they're too chicken to change it at all, because they are the ones who are on this gravy train, right? Again, Dan is just a dolt, but Graham, you know, knows better, or at least could. You know, they talked about archaeologists not caring. If anyone cares, it's archaeologists. I mean, we do a job that does not make that much money. You do it out of passion. You go into it because of passion. Everything out there is out there to destroy your passion, to take away your passion, to make things harder. So, no, archaeologists care deeply. I know 110% Flint Dibble, who I've talked to a bunch of times. Flint utterly cares. Flint's just like me. Like, we care. We wouldn't do it if we didn't. It's these guys who found a way, right? Dan has found a way out of obscurity to get 15 minutes of fame because he's a caricature, you know? And Graham, this has been his same old deal for 30 years. So he's in his 70s. He ain't going to stop riding this gravy train. But in the end, I'm just saddened and angered that I wasn't on the list. And with that, in my pain, as the victim I am, I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast. Please like and subscribe wherever you like and subscribe. And if you have questions for me, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, feel free to reach out using the links below or go to my YouTube channel, Kinkella Teaches Archaeology. See you guys next time.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultura Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.